Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. We're coming to you today from Berlin, where we're attending the SECE European Compliance and Ethics Institute. Joining us for this podcast are Anna Kompanik and Frank Brown for the Center for International Private Enterprise. Anna, Frank, thanks for joining us today and being a part of the program here.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk about what the subject of your session here, which is the challenges that face mid-sized companies. So aside from less resources, what are some of the challenges that you're finding as you're working with these mid-sized companies around the world that they face when it comes to setting up a compliance program?
I would say, first of all, there is still a substantial knowledge gap. So when we say compliance here in Berlin, we have a pretty good idea what that means, what some basic components of a compliance program are. And that is just not the case in most of the world still. So people may have a vague idea. Also, the language itself can be a problem. In many languages, there is no good word to translate compliance into. So a lot of the barriers are around this basic knowledge. I would also add that, I mean, compliance in general is a new, fairly new profession. It is sort of more established in US, Europe now. But in many other countries, it's still sort of a very new concept. And there are no or very few networks, which is why I think SCCE's role in your work internationally is also very important. But that's something that CIPE also recognizes. And for instance, we help to promote professional associations of compliance people in places like Ukraine or Moldova.
And wait, let me just dive in there for a second. I probably should have framed this. Why don't you, though? Which parts of the world, you know, as we're talking about mid-sized enterprise, we're not talking about one in Cleveland. We're talking about you're working with companies and countries such as?
Kenya, again, Ukraine. Well, broadly speaking, non-OECD countries with some exceptions, but places that may be described in various ways as developing countries, emerging markets, frontier markets.
So obviously you've got companies that are interested in setting up compliance programs. Are they generally setting them up because they see the value for internal reasons? Or is it really due to pressure from larger companies that they do business with that say, hey, I can't buy from you until I have these assurances?
I would say it's both. But in terms of sequencing, a little pressure usually helps. So it does help to have a larger, maybe international business partner who says, you know, this is important. You should pay attention if you want us to maintain our business relationship, you should do it. But then I would say also the companies we work with and train, they also understand the internal benefits argument as well when it is sort of clearly laid out to them. So we often talk about anti-corruption compliance in terms of a risk management system. We try to help companies understand that, look, this is not just about not paying bribes. This is about putting in place policies, procedures, mechanisms that can help you operate in a more efficient, more sustainable way as a company. So sort of there's a benefit to it that is intrinsic. And also at the same time, you know, let's not judge mid-sized companies by or their motivation by standards stricter than we would judge large companies, right? Mm-hmm. How many of them came to institute best practices in compliance out of sudden realization that it's the right thing to do, and how many also face some other external pressures?
Yeah, it's risk management for them, for pretty much everyone. And I think one of the points that you make that's a good one there is that by taking it into that sort of risk management framework, you make it about a business issue rather
that's
than
right.
just about this foreign compliance thing for which there's no word for in their language.
That's right.
So we talked about the larger companies that they're doing business with. Are those larger companies helping them along with that process? I mean, there's obviously, at least in the US, prodding from the government that larger companies should help the smaller ones in their supply chain to have a compliance program. Are you seeing that happen or not?
I think we are generally, and certainly it's most visible when there's a specific action against a specific large company. So one series of actions and settlements we've been watching very carefully is those that grew out of a scandal a couple of years ago in Uzbekistan that led to record fines against telecoms based in Amsterdam and most recently in Moscow. And one of the dividends we're seeing from that is that these very large telecom companies are now in the many, many markets in the former Soviet Union where they worked, are now deploying their compliance officers to help out other companies in those markets, regardless of whether they have a relationship with the telecom. So there's a fantastic knock-on effect. Beyond that sort of, you know, pushing down these requirements to smaller companies under duress, I think we're seeing an overarching surge in connection with the just sheer number of laws that forbid the bribing of foreign officials or bribery generally overseas. So, you know, we have a French law that's been amended to make it much stronger, an Italian law, a Spanish law, a Brazilian law, an Argentinian law, lots and lots of new laws and a general heightened awareness and, to be honest, confusion about what to do. And that's where I think organizations like ours and like yours come into play, because at the end of the day, it's not rocket science. The basic principles are similar, and we don't want to get hung up on the relatively minor differences. Mm-hmm. Something I think that some companies perhaps that sell these services, risk management tools and risk assessment tools, perhaps intentionally do to make it more confusing to create demand for their services, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think that's certainly a big risk there. I mean, one of the things that I think has been a great benefit to the business community is that it doesn't matter which country's laws you look at when they enunciate what they expect out of a compliance program, the similarity is just shocking. I mean, everything basically does go back to the federal sentencing guidelines, which is not surprisingly because there's nothing counterintuitive there. I mean, know your risks and do something about it is really the message there. So, yeah, to the extent that we can help everyone understand what the common ground is and sort of demystify things and provide guidance, the better off everyone is. Now, from your work in Thailand and Africa and elsewhere, what are you seeing that is working?
So I think, in a nutshell, collective action. So, and that means a lot of things. It can, on one end of the spectrum, it can mean just companies working together for their own self-interests in harmony, and it could be a purely sort of internal process. But it builds up a sense of solidarity, of knowledge sharing, and a sense that everybody can benefit from reducing the overall risk profile of business in a certain country. And on the other end of the spectrum of collective action is when those companies begin to advocate, for example, to the government, to change laws and regulations that engender corruption. And that for a single company to push for those sorts of reforms can be a pretty risky endeavor in a lot of places we work. But when companies act collectively, the risk of doing that is reduced.
Through something like a national chamber of commerce, is that how they're doing it? Or
sometimes,
or
yes.
Or just something, or informally a bunch going together?
No, typically there's some sort of institution that's the home, that's the foundation of it. And if you have a chamber of commerce that's independent enough and understands the value in doing this, I can think of one in Ukraine, for example, then yes, they will sort of be the home for this effort.
Interesting. So as companies are moving forward, you're seeing a lot of progress of stuff that's working. Are you also seeing any traps to avoid?
Yeah, I think, so ISO 37001 is sometimes presented as a sort of panacea. And I know a number of multinationals and a number of countries have adopted that standard. Countries ranging from tiny and highly, highly corrupt like Moldova to large, sophisticated, much less corrupt countries like Malaysia. And the trap there is that one sort of one size fits all approach really crowds out our constituents, which are the mid-sized companies, because they simply don't have the resources to comply with a standard that is that complex.
And I would add another sort of common trap in how multinational companies try to reach those, you know, first, second, third tier suppliers is too much stick, not enough carrots. So sort of
too much stick, not enough carrot.
don't lead with thou shall not because I say so, or FCPA or UK Bribery Act says so. There has to be a business case, as you said earlier, to get to that internal company motivation. They need to understand sort of what is my specific business case being in a particular country for doing it. So sort of framing the reasons and the motivation for compliance in positive terms.
Yeah, and obviously most people much prefer being sold something as a benefit to them, not as a way to avoid punishment. Well, I hope this was a benefit to everyone who was listening and not a punishment. And I want to thank both of you for sharing your wisdom here. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SECE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.